Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, it's Healthy Gut Girl, Kitty Martone, and this is Stuff Your Doctor Should Know. I'm coming to you live from deep inside your large intestine. And do you remember me talking about the gut and psychology syndrome back in the day? That is the book that is written by Dr. McBride, and she was kind of the pioneer on the scene back, I guess it was in the late 80s, who made the connection between gut health and any kind of psychological syndrome, from schizophrenia, even autism, behavioral disorders, bipolar. Actually, then they didn't have bipolar disorder, but basically all of these sort of syndromes correlating with gut health and how the gut plays an intrinsic role in the health of our emotional outlook and how we feel, how we behave. And I just thought that was so fascinating back then. And then I really got into the whole progesterone and hormone aspect, because of course that also governs how you feel about things, you know, depression and how you, you know, if you're excited when you should be, or if you're unhappy when, you know, depressed, and normal levels of those kinds of ups and downs that we go through as human beings, and how important gut health plays a role in that. So hormones, gut health, and how, you know, we view life. It's just super important. And you think about how a lot of little kids, when they have tummy aches, what they really mean is that they're stressed, right? Oftentimes it isn't an actual stomach ache. They're nervous about something. They're scared about something. And we really do carry a lot of the way we feel emotionally kind of manifests into our stomachs. But there's all these other things that are going on when that's happening. For example, our hormones are playing this really important role. Our adrenal glands, our cortisol and our progesterone and our estrogen and our epinephrine, norepinephrine, all of these hormones are firing off and doing different things based on what we're feeling, what we're seeing, what we're thinking, what we're eating. And if our gut isn't in a state of healthy, efficient balance, it can totally throw off how you feel every day. It can affect how you wake up in the morning. It can affect the way you feel about your spouse or your children. And it's interesting, because a lot of times, like in my estrogen group, or when clients ask me, they're like, I just feel this constant nervousness in my chest, or I just feel, this impending doom. I'm always feeling this, like something bad is going to happen. And almost always these feelings, these gut feelings, are stemming from the gut, and it's not real. They are biochemical reactions that are setting off this cascade of hormonal reactions in our body. Anyway, it's so incredibly fascinating, and then it led me to kind of research different doctors that were experts in the area of hormones and gut health. And that's how I found Dr. Platt. If you all remember Dr. Platt, he wrote the book Adrenaline Dominance, and we do have an episode if you want to go back and listen to that. And that episode for my listeners was groundbreaking, because a lot of my listeners are practitioners and physicians. And it opened up a whole new world looking at this notion of adrenaline dominance. And now I've gone further into that rabbit hole and am discovering that the thyroid plays an incredible, crucial role in this adrenaline dominance. Because as we spoke about over the last several podcasts, when we are operating on our emergency hormones, when we're defaulting to our emergency hormones, we are not utilizing our energy as fuel properly. So the food that you're consuming, the nutrients that you're taking, the supplements that you're taking, we aren't utilizing that fuel as energy. Instead, we are defaulting to using our emergency hormones, or our backup power system, our backup batteries, right? Instead of using fuel as energy. And when we do this chronically over time, it just becomes such a mess. It can create this cascade of issues stemming from stomach problems to autoimmune conditions, but also to psychology problems, like psychological issues. And this is where our guest today comes in. She was also introduced to Adrenal Endowments and Dr. Platt through the group, and she is a naturopathic board certified doctor, and she has a practice, and she works with children who have autism, behavioral disorders, developmental delays. I mean, she works with everybody, and she's in our group, and she also serves the community in that way too. So she sees, just typical people, but she also sees these children and has learned to use progesterone therapy to actually help regulate and bring balance to these children, as well as working on their gut health, right? So it's incredible what she has to share with us. And she's been such a great person in the group. She's a wonderful doctor who contributes greatly, has so much wonderful information. And you're going to love this episode. So why don't you tell us what you do and why you do it?
Well, I'm a traditional naturopath. I am a board certified naturopathic doctor, but I've gone the traditional route instead of the medical route because I have found that the medical route didn't really help me and my family as much as I hoped it would with a slew of issues that we've faced over the years. So, I went to a naturopathic physician to get some help a long time ago. And I was so impressed with what she did, but I didn't go to medical school and I don't really want to practice medicine. So I kind of wanted to take it a different route. And I was so inspired by her and really felt like after what I've been through with myself and my family and even animals, I used to work in animal rescue. Oh. I really felt like once I started getting better, that I wanted to help other people. And my business partner and I started a holistic mental health practice because I also have a degree in business. So I helped him get that rolling. He's a licensed professional clinical counselor, and he's always been interested in holistic health as well. So for a while, it was just getting the business going, getting the mental health side of it going. And then after a while, we really saw a need for a lot of the clients that were coming in to have the physical side of their health and their lifestyle addressed, because that was a real stumbling block. And when you're in a counseling session, people want to talk about their problems. They don't want to talk so much about how much Mountain Dew they're drinking or yeah. how much coffee they're drinking or whether or not they're getting exercise or sleeping. So he was able to sneak some of that in, but we really saw a need for someone to jump in and spend some time with our clients talking about these really foundational, super important things. So I just kind of jumped in as a volunteer at first and started working with people on their sleep, their diet. How much water are you drinking? Are you dehydrated? Do you have gut issues? Are you getting up off the couch? Like a lot of people who are depressed don't want to go out, or that have anxiety don't want to go out and do anything. So I was working through a lot of those issues with people, even telling people like how to do their grocery shopping, how to shop on the perimeter of the grocery store and buy Whole Foods, things like that, making little changes. And it kind of went from a volunteer position to a paid coach, kind of a situation. And we were looking for a naturopathic doctor to come in and work in our practice and put a couple offers out, and nothing happened. We're kind of in a isolated area of Northwest Ohio, kind of a rural area. Mm-hmm. And most of the naturopaths or holistic minded practitioners in this area have a pretty good practice already going. So, and nobody wants to be here. They want to be in the bigger cities.
Right.
But we wanted to offer something here. So I was actually able to go back to school and get board certified as a naturopath. And I practice the traditional kind of naturopathy, which is a little bit different. But that's kind of how I got started. So,
wow. That's a great story. I mean, you know, where there's need, you have to fill the need, especially when you're a small business owner and you start to see that, which is exactly what happened with my husband and I. I was like, yeah, we definitely need a nutritionist. Okay, I'm on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's good. So, how did you find that what you studied, how did you automatically begin to implement that into mental health and wellness? Like, where did things gravitate towards hormones, or did they gravitate towards gut health, or gravitate towards, you know, specific conditions like ADHD? And then how did you start to implement what you knew and everything?
Yes.
A big question.
Yeah. All of those things. I think the first thing that we really honed in on was gut health. We noticed both in my, you know, and this started in our own family, really, with myself and my oldest daughter, who is on the spectrum and has, you know, she's a neurodiverse child. And we noticed that when she and I started to fix our gut health, that a lot of our symptoms went away. She was like a new kid when we really started to address gut health. And a big part of that was candida mm-hmm. and some other infections, you know, co-infections with that. So that was kind of an eye-opener for me, because my business partner was, you know, interested in the holistic aspect and also really having a hard time with some individuals. And he was noticing that some of these people were complaining while they were with him about gut health symptoms, you know. And I said, well, we need to start working with people on their gut health. So one of the first things that we did was we brought in a really smart lady. I call her our human encyclopedia.
Nice.
And she is a nutritionist, kind of like what you do. And she is, I think she's on one of the boards of the Weston A. Price Foundation. And we're just so lucky to have her here in Northwest Ohio. So she started coming in and working. She would do little programs and we'd invite people to come in and learn about gut health. So she talked about a whole slew of different things, from how to ferment food. We had a cooking class and we made sauerkraut and,
nice.
You know, she talked about all kinds of things and really believed in what we were doing. So she really helped us kind of get our foot in the door with that. And, we were seeing success. One of the hard parts was that a lot of times it's the kiddos, you know, like parents will bring kids in and they say, please, please help my child. The behavior is off the charts. And then we would have to work with the parent mm-hmm. on changing the diet. But those parents who were really on board with doing the hard work, and it is hard work, we saw a lot of success in those kiddos. So that was a real eye opener for us in the beginning. And then, you know, as I kind of worked through some of my own health issues, I realized on my own that I had adrenaline dominance. So then I started working on learning about hormones just for myself, just out of pure curiosity and wanting to help myself. Mm-hmm. And the more I learned, the more I was able to start applying this in our practice. And this is just more of a recent development where I've been kind of experimenting with my clients who are willing to work on their hormone health. I mean, I had the basics down. I knew about some estrogen dominance things and a little bit about how to work with PCOS. Mm-hmm. PMS symptoms and things like that. But in the last year or so, my eyes have really been opened to the fact that both men and women have hormone problems. And I believe that along with the gut issues that I'm seeing, that most of our clients also have hormone imbalances. Mm-hmm. And many of them have adrenaline dominance as well as estrogen dominance in their families. Mm-hmm. So now we're kind of recruiting people to try working on hormones in addition to gut. And what I am seeing in myself, in my family, and in our clients is so encouraging and so amazing. I mean, the strides that people make are just tremendous.
Right. And
it's so encouraging to see this hope, because, you know, a lot of times mental health diagnoses, they are considered sometimes incurable, you know, and people are prescribed drugs and, you know, those have long-term effects and things like that. So, it's just so encouraging to see people coming out of that fog and having some hope and not having to use pharmaceuticals, mm-hmm. and not having to deal with problems down the road that are related to those drugs, mm-hmm. which deplete minerals and cause all kinds of havoc. And also being able to help people avoid the problems that I've personally avoided by having taken years of OTC oral birth control pills.
Right.
That's a whole other story.
Yeah.
which I think had a part in wrecking my gut health and my hormone health. You know, so that's what we're seeing. I'm seeing this culmination of a lot of things. And the really cool thing is, you know, I'm a huge fan of Dr. Michael Platt, who's been on your podcast before. And he taught me so much about what he coined as adrenaline dominance. And he's really a pioneer in using bioidentical progesterone to help people, especially with ADHD, which I wanted to kind of focus on today. Mm-hmm. And then I'm a real advocate also of the Weston A. Price Foundation, which I know you are too, and their style of eating traditional foods and help, you know, healing the gut, and even the GAPS diet, which I do recommend for some of our clients, which I believe that Dr. Natasha Campbell McBride was kind of the pioneer of that. Mm-hmm. She has a book. Yeah. We have a lot of those yellow books at our office, and they're usually always loaned out to somebody.
The gut psychology syndrome book, right? The GAPS diet.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Correct. And it's not an easy thing to implement, but
no, it's one of the hardest diets.
It is. And I know, because I've done it. Yeah. I have empathy for the parents that decide to do it. Mm-hmm. But the nice thing is that what I'm learning is that Dr. Platt and the Weston A. Price Foundation, and even Morley Robbins, who's been on your podcast as well, they all really advocate for this traditional ancestral style of diet. Yeah. I don't know that Dr. Michael Platt really says it that way, but the way that he describes eating goes right along with that.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's kind of cool to see how all of these things come together and work so well together. And mm-hmm. I feel like I'm kind of now picking and choosing from all of these different really brilliant minds and strategies and seeing them work in my clients. So,
I love that. You're right. And it's like, it's all the same kind of truth seeking practitioners and physicians and people, scientists who are seeking that sort of like, let's get back to our roots with a lot of the way we heal our bodies through food, mm-hmm. and through supplementation. And so let's talk about adrenaline dominance before we head right into ADHD, which is because a lot of people, you know, I don't talk about it a lot, even though I should, mm-hmm. even though we reference it a lot. We reference the idea of having high cortisol and being in fight or flight and the sympathetic nervous system. And so, you know, just for the audience, and you can go deeper into this, is the idea that, you know, we are forced to be in a in a fight or flight, in the nervous system part of our bodies that deals with emergencies and fear and acting quickly, and not the rest and digest, which is the parasympathetic. And that is the relaxing and having time to think about things and just calm and normal vital signs. And, you know, we need both of these forms of our nervous system, but the sympathetic nervous system is something, the fight or flight is something that it's unprecedented. And as far as we know in human history, people say, come on, people were starving and they were in concentration camps and they were running from tigers and all this stuff throughout history. But something that's different now is our chemical toxic burden and the quality of food we have and all of the non-communicable diseases like autoimmune and diabetes and all these different kinds of things that we're dealing with that may not put your conscious thoughts into an emergency state, like I'm running from whatever, but it does put your physical body in a state that requires these heightened hormones, that are meant to try to help us, but adrenaline and aldosterone and cortisol. And so being in that consistent state all the time or most of the time is something that I'm learning that I have been in since I was born. You know, Constantine in the group, I'm certain he is some level of genius, and it's just his recollection, his research recollection and everything he's able to help. I mean, he's a health coach now, and he's helping me and work with my thyroid. And so not to go down that rabbit hole, but what I'm learning about myself is that, you know, part of the reason that I'm still in these different states of sympathetic is because of this adrenaline dominance, which ties in with my thyroid. So So we're dealing with, you and I are also Dr. Platt fans, but dealing with this from a hormonal level is so cool. So we'll talk about that, but tell me what ADHD, like, first of all, the personal connection you have to that sort of behavior. And also what a relief it was to find this whole bunch of research about how we can go about balancing that.
Yeah. So the funny thing is that I have not personally been diagnosed with ADHD, but when I started studying some of Dr. Platt's information, I realized that I probably fit the diagnosis. And the more that I learned, you know, I can really relate to what you said about like the little shaking chihuahua. I'm also that way, you know, and I think I've lived this whole life like this and didn't realize it. This is just my normal. And I think that besides what you mentioned, you know, the toxic burden and all these things, overstimulation that we have, you know, our fast-paced lives and all of these things that do not help with the stress hormones and our nervous system.
Yeah. Also, you know, I want to interrupt you before I forget this little thing, because I made a note about it. I want people also who might be like, oh, I know people like that, to stop for a moment and consider that not all adrenaline dominant people are like I just described, like a chihuahua. There are a lot of people who are extremely even keel on the outside. Mm-hmm. They will, especially some A-type personalities, you might know some of them, where you like, they're suppressing that outward feeling of wanting to just go crazy, and they're suppressing it, and it becomes inward anxiety or inward nervousness or inward frustration, all kinds, you know, where they get maybe heart palpitations or they have, you know, inward panic, and where it's described as outwardly calm, inwardly nervous or excitatory inside. And so, you know, just so that I'm one characteristic of adrenaline dominance, but there are many, many, many other types. Okay, go ahead.
Yes, so many. And you described me. I am that type A person. People usually describe me as very laid back, easygoing, calm, but I'm a person who has also experienced a lot of panic attacks in my life and a lot of chronic illness that I believe is related to a lot of this pushing down the stress on the inside. Mm-hmm. So yes, it definitely can manifest in a lot of different ways. And I also believe that, you know, when we're looking at it from a mental health perspective, sometimes I don't want to say that doctors or mental health practitioners blame the patient, but sometimes patients feel like they're responsible because maybe going to the doctor or going to counseling is not helpful for them. You know, it's like there's still a missing piece. And, you know, we say, well, if you do your EFT tapping, which by the way, works very well for panic attacks and things like that. But mm-hmm. like, if you do these things, like, you know, maybe you're not doing enough, or maybe you're not doing something right. But I think people are really relieved when I tell them, you know, part of this is genetic too. I mean, we inherit our hormones and our kind of nervous tendencies from our parents. And I definitely can see that along the lines in my family, and it has manifested in many different ways in, you know, from family member to family member down the line. And I've been paying more attention to this as I'm learning. And you're absolutely right. You know, I can see how we pass it on, but we're all kind of different too.
Yeah.
So when people are in my office and I'm starting to suspect that they have something going on with their hormones or adrenaline, when I'm sitting and talking to them, or when someone's child is in my office, I observe the parent and the child, which I think a lot of people are surprised about, because I believe that this is something that is passed on. And I also ask the parents a lot of questions about their history, mm-hmm. And women especially, about their hormonal history, because I'm seeing a lot of connection between the estrogen dominance and the adrenaline dominance. But when people are in my office, I have like a lot of fidget toys and things, because I do share, you know, clients with the mental health side. So we all have, you know, stress relieving objects in our offices. So I'll see people fidgeting, squeezing objects, sometimes getting really distracted by their phones, little kids just wanting to go from one activity to the next, yeah. Sometimes not being able to settle down, or the opposite, where they are so overwhelmed by being at a doctor's office, you know, that they are just completely shut down.
Yeah.
Sometimes the fidget toys get broken because people are so hard on them because they're so stressed out. Like they look very calm, but if you watch their hands, they're just like ready to break this little fidget toy. And it has happened because they're just like so stressed out. And then parents complain that their kids at home, usually, it usually manifests best at home more than it does in my office. So mm-hmm. parents have to talk about, you know, what's going on at home. But for adults, the symptoms can be much more subtle. And one thing that I've noticed is that my clients who, well, I should preface this by saying my intakes are 2 hours usually, or up to 2 hours long. This is how long I sit and talk to people. Follow-ups can be up to an hour. And a lot of times I suspect this in people who just talk and talk and talk that whole time. They just, you know, it's just like their brain is just going. And it's almost like they're really relieved to have somebody finally listening to them. Mm-hmm. And they talk the entire appointment. Like sometimes I just sit back and I think, okay, this is what they need today.
Right.
Yeah. So those are some of the things that I see, and that kind of. Well, do you want to talk more about ADHD specifically?
Yeah. And just like, I'm so curious, and I know that my listeners are curious about, you know, the alternative ways to treat it, because medication is, you know, including adrenaline dominance, treating that. And we don't like to use the words treating, but, you know, just how you go about, sure. You know, bringing balance.
Right. So yeah, I mean, there are different ways to diagnose ADHD too. And some of those methods also involve a treatment plan. So if you come into our office and you see one of our licensed counselors and they diagnose ADHD from the DSM-5, which is the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, then they come up with a treatment plan, and that's considered a mental health diagnosis. On the flip side, a lot of kiddos are referred to us because they're having trouble at school. So they sometimes are diagnosed by an educational team at school. So that's considered an educational diagnosis. And in that case, a lot of times the treatment plan would be something like the child would have an IEP, or, you know, they would be seeing maybe an occupational therapist, mm-hmm. or something along those lines while they're at school. So those are a couple different ways you can get that diagnosis. I think you can also get the diagnosis from a developmental pediatrician, but I do know that in the area where I am, the DPs like to see something happen at the school first. They like to be referred from the school. But unfortunately, a lot of these treatment plans that are definitely helpful don't take into account what's going on biochemically, neurologically, hormonally in this person. And I really think that is the missing piece. Mm-hmm. So when people come to me, if they have an ADHD diagnosis, great, you know, you've got a diagnosis, we've got a starting place, that's fine. Something that's missing is that we're forgetting that we're helping people, we're not treating a diagnosis. Right. So I feel like that's where I come in, is I am helping the person as a whole, mm-hmm. whether they have that diagnosis or not. And some people come to me and they say, well, I want my diagnosis. And I say, well, go talk to Matt. Uh-huh. And then you can come back to me and we'll keep working on what we're working with. But, you know, if you want your diagnosis, there are sometimes reasons for that, like getting support at school or getting a scholarship for tutoring or whatever you need. But I feel like ADHD is kind of misunderstood, and there's this hole that needs to be filled. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm trying to do in my practice. And I've even started thinking about ADHD in a different way. I like to call it adrenaline dominance hormone dysfunction.
Oh, wow. That's good. Adrenaline dominance hormone dysfunction. Instead of attention, what is it?
Attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. You know, I like to call it adrenaline dominance hormone dysfunction.
That's incredible. That is so accurate as well. You know, it reminds me of, I had this teacher once when I was studying nutrition, and he was a doctor, he was a naturopath, and he used to say, and this blew my mind, he used to say, you know, we're looking at like schizophrenia as this like, almost like something you can catch, you know, like a flu, like a disease that you can catch. Yeah. And we separate that from ADHD, and we separate that from just hyperactivity and different depression and bipolarism. And we separate all these things. He's like, no, he said, these are all rungs on the ladder of really hormone dysfunction. You know, all of a sudden it's like, I can relate to that. I could imagine in a different circumstance, in a different world, I have tragedy in my life. I lose everyone. I lose my job. And now you're faced with different choices. And who knows? I could easily be that person. And when you put it like that, especially as a practitioner, as someone who's here to help people, it starts to change your outlook. You start to see yourself, and all of a sudden your ability to help them changes. And same with children, same with the ADHD. And when Charlie and I worked with kids with autism and different types of cerebral palsy and stuff, you know, and you think that's their life. I disconnect from it because I have to deal with working with these children can be so mm-hmm. intense, mm-hmm. but you can't completely disconnect, right? You have to see yourself in that. person or see that you could have that child. That could have been me if I did have children. And then again, it changes how you treat people, I feel like. That turned into a philosophical rant, but same thing. Rungs of the ladder, all the same types of disorder, just different severities of it. What do you think?
Yeah. And I mean, if you think about it, a lot of these things that are mental health diagnoses, like you said, really could fall under an adrenaline dominance hormone dysfunction. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a spectrum of things. The other thing that's interesting is, you know, you can go from one practitioner to another, and one practitioner can look in the DSM and look at the symptoms and diagnose you, and you can go somewhere else and they'll have a completely different opinion, and they're still looking at the DSM and they're still putting criteria together for a diagnosis. But you know, we have clients who have come to us with a whole list of diagnoses. They say, I have all of these things, and I'm still like, how's your gut health? What's going on with your hormones? Like, yeah, that's what I'm interested in. Are you sleeping?
Yeah.
How are you eating? You know? So it's all, we have to make sure that all of these foundational pieces are there to put that ladder on that you're talking about. If that foundation is wobbly, that ladder is going to fall over no matter where you are on it.
Yeah.
You're going to fall over. So
yeah.
And that was kind of a really beautiful thing you said about seeing yourself and other people too. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel like I'm kind of lucky because I've been through a lot of challenges in my own life. So I'm able to understand when somebody comes to me and they're, you know, they say, I'm a hot mess or I'm a dumpster fire today. I say, yeah, I remember being there. And, you know, there's hope and let's figure this out together.
Yeah.
And I think that also is something that's really missing in healthcare today. I don't, you know,
very much.
And always has been. Sick care.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think what I do is more of healthcare, but that's a really missing component.
Hello. Quick interruption to tell you about the in-home dried urine Dutch Complete hormone test. It's not enough to just know your levels, high or low, but for example, what are you doing with your estrogen? Is it being pushed down unhealthy, potentially dangerous pathways that could lead to breast or prostate cancer, fibroids, or insulin resistance? Or are you converting your testosterone into estrogen and having hair loss and low libido? Or are your adrenals burnt out and at the root of all your hormonal struggles? No point in guessing. I love this test. I take it once a year and it keeps me on track with my goal of aging gracefully. Use your coupon ED25 as in estrogen dominance 25 and get $25 off your test interpretation and 6-week program of supplement, detox, and dietary recommendations. I have 5 years of experience reading and interpreting this test and was trained by the makers Precision Analytical. Coupled with my gut health expertise, and this program is about as comprehensive as you're going to get. Check it out in the show notes for more details.
But something I wanted to mention is that, so that genetic component that I mentioned before, one really interesting thing that I have noticed is that when I'm really lucky enough to have the biological mom in the room with, it's usually a kiddo who's coming in with a concern about ADHD, I do ask the mom a lot of questions, and if she had symptoms of like hyperemesis gravidarum, you know, where you're throwing up a lot during your pregnancy or just extremely nauseous, mm-hmm. If you've had pregnancy loss or even stillbirth, infertility, any kind of severe hormonal problems over the years, PMS, PMDD, then I see a much higher incidence of them having a child who has been formally diagnosed with ADHD.
Interesting.
Because these kids, whether they're a little boy or a little girl, they're still inheriting that genetic fingerprint from their mother. And also the other thing is that, you know, when these hormonal things happen, we have that estrogen dominant situation. And when babies are in utero, they are just bathing in that progesterone, you know, they're just swimming in it. And that has a lot to do with how our brain develops. You know, I really think that that makes a difference. And that's almost like when I have a mom telling me how terrible their pregnancies were and how hard it was to get pregnant and carry that child and how sick they were and how they have suffered with these hormonal problems over the years. I know right away that that child probably did not have as much progesterone in the womb as a neurotypical child probably would have had. So
yeah,
that's a real key right there. And when I hear those things, I'm like, you know, have you heard about bioidentical progesterone? Can we talk about it?
Yeah.
And I encourage it for the mom and the child usually at that point, because we know that this is a generational issue that we're looking at. So
that's so good. And it's been coming up quite a bit lately in my recent podcasts. And that's true. You know, that if you are estrogen dominant in the womb, or if you're estrogen dominant as a mother and a pregnant mom, and that baby will be estrogen dominant. Just like if you have got any level of gut dysbiosis, that baby will inherit your microbes and will develop his own, you know, microbiome by the time he's 3 months old or so. And it will be very similar to yours, you know, and the child who's the youngest. So if you have multiple children, the youngest child is going to take the brunt of those deficiencies. The one that the last baby born is going to take the brunt of that. I have a new client. I think, I don't know much about her, but I do know that she has 10 children. I haven't worked with her yet, but I'm so eager to find out about like all of those, you know, and let me tell you, she's coming to me for a reason. So we know that there's definitely, I mean, growing a human is such a big deal, and it costs a lot. It costs a lot of minerals. It costs a lot of vitamins. It costs a tremendous amount of hormones. And there's just no shortage of estrogen. We know that. There is no shortage of estrogen, very, very, very rarely. And even then, I'd argue and say there's probably something being overlooked, and there probably is an estrogen dominance issue. But when the baby is born and the baby is estrogen, so one thing the doctors don't do is they don't prescribe progesterone throughout the entire pregnancy. They just do it for the first trimester, which I think is a massive mistake. And all of the studies that have come out about what you said with brain development, with kidney development, with lung development. I mean, we know that progesterone receptors in the lungs, there's so many. And if you have those receptors downregulated, you aren't receiving that progesterone. So if you have a preemie baby, or you have any issues with respiratory issues with the child when it's early or anything, the fact that they aren't intravenously giving these children, these infants progesterone is to me mind-boggling. It's just the data is out there. Mm-hmm. So then the baby's born, the baby gets older, and the baby starts to have, you know, toddler stage, or even before that, when the baby starts to have cognition, like you start to see the baby, you know, really making decisions with their eyes and looking around. So at that point, what's the earliest you can diagnose someone with ADHD? I know depression is as early as 4 or 5 months, I've heard. So what about ADHD? Do you know?
I believe it's usually school age. Okay. This is what I've been told, because I don't diagnose it. What I've been told is school age. Usually that's about the time that it's normally diagnosed in a school setting.
Right.
We've been homeschoolers, so it's kind of been different for us.
Right. You and I know that it shows up really early, as, you know, night terrors, fidgeting already, you know, doing things like walking on their toes and flapping their hands and things like this. That is already a precursor to adrenaline dominance. And then of course, autism and all kinds of other spectrum things.
Sensory seeking, sensory avoiding.
Okay, great. Yeah.
A lot of those things. In our practice, we see kiddos as young as three. I'm not sure if Matt has diagnosed anyone that young with ADHD, mm-hmm. but I definitely have my radar on for that mm-hmm. with everybody who comes in. I mean, we jokingly say we see people from ages 3 to 93. and
sorry, you know, if you're 94, you're out.
Yeah, if you're 94, you're out. Sorry about that. You're fine. But I mean, I have my radar on for this stuff with everybody now because my oldest daughter, who I mentioned, who's atypical, super neurodiverse and a very cool kid. Mm-hmm. I had a very rough pregnancy with her. It was tough getting pregnant. It was tough for me to stay pregnant and she was really a miracle. And I did not use progesterone during my pregnancy because I just didn't know back then. I mean, this was 10 years ago before I really, knew much about any of this. And you know, as soon as she was born, you know, that mother's tuition, I knew that something was up with her. And of course I loved her like crazy. And she was my right-hand girl. I mean, you know, I was hers and she was mine, but mm-hmm. my gut was telling me that something wasn't quite right. I mean, even the birth was very, very difficult. And I just mm-hmm. knew right from the start. And for my second, I had had some losses in between her and my second child. And I had gone to this really wonderful OBGYN and told her my story. But she said, I think you have low progesterone. She didn't call it estrogen dominance, but she said, I think you have low progesterone. Let's get it checked out. And she did the blood test. I'd never had my levels checked ever.
Wow. Wow.
I even went to an endocrinologist and they just checked my thyroid.
Wow.
But So she's like, wow, you know, you barely have any progesterone. So she wrote a prescription for progesterone mm-hmm. right away, not the fake stuff, the bioidentical stuff. And it was in the form of suppositories. And she said, go get these, take them home. The minute you think you're pregnant, start taking these and don't stop. And then unfortunately she got hired by another hospital and moved away, but I had this progesterone and, got pregnant with my second daughter and started taking it. And I took it much longer than she said, take it for the first trimester, but she said, you know, some people take it longer than that. And that's okay too. If you feel like that's going to be good for you. And I'm like, I am not losing this baby. I am taking this as long as I can. So I took it and took it and took it well into my second trimester. That pregnancy was easy. And I was 37. So
wow.
You know, I was considered high risk and old.
Right.
And I mean, that pregnancy was wonderful. The birth was, you know, for a birth, it was easy. I mean, birth is never easy, but compared to the other, it was. And when she was born, totally different baby, mm-hmm. you know, totally different personality, totally different set of behaviors, totally different development. And I really credit that OBGYN who was not thinking in a typical way and told me I needed progesterone. I mean,
wow.
I really believe it made a huge difference.
That's incredible. And I love that story. And so now, you know, we think it's a sex hormone. We think that it's a pregnancy hormone and everybody thinks that. And women in there that have hysterectomies or that are well beyond menopause, they go into their doctor, like my mother, for example, who's in her late 70s. And it's like, hey, can I get some progesterone? And they literally laugh like, you don't need that. You know, you don't, you're 94.
Yeah.
You're past the age of needing anything. You know, they're just like, no, you don't need that. And she's like, well, my daughter said, I'm like, yeah, they don't care what your daughter said, mom. And so basically that it becomes this weird, it's got this weird stigma that it's a female hormone, a female sex hormone, and mostly for pregnancy. And now that the tides are slowly changing, we're starting to realize that it's actually neurodevelopmental for everybody and actually prevents Alzheimer's, and it opposes estrogen. So it keeps you from the damaging and dangerous effects of estrogen. Even though we need estrogen, it helps protect you from the potentially dangerous effects of estrogen, and including bone loss and stuff like that, cardiovascular disease, etc. And then you have your baby, and then the baby gets older, and now what? Now we've got a child who is bedwetting and has night terrors and has all these different types of things. What's your kind of protocol with that? Say they come to you and they don't even have, maybe they're medicated. And how do you work with someone like that?
Well, I don't have the ability to prescribe or unprescribe any kind of medication. So the first thing I do is I just try to educate people. I really consider myself more of a teacher and a partner in healing than a doctor. So I really don't have authority over telling somebody you have to go off of medication, but the medications that are prescribed for things like ADHD, I think they're dangerous. I mean, if you read the information that comes with the medication, one of the side effects is sudden death. I don't want to give that to my child. But I always respect a parent's choice. You know, I think that it's a very personal choice. I just try to share information that might help them make a better educated choice. And I do find that when I get curious with my clients and we look up this information, you know, because I consider myself kind of a detective alongside them. And I say, well, let's look this up. Let's see how this medication works and what it's doing. And I would say most of the time when they actually go back and read the information alongside me, they're shocked. They're horrified. They are like, how can I get my kid off this medication? And, you know, so I say, okay, well, let's talk about what we can do from a lifestyle standpoint. I'm also a really big fan of Dr. Kelly Brogan, and she's a holistic psychiatrist. And she was one of the first psychiatrists who was openly talking about the dangers of psychotropic or any kind of like mental health pharmacology. Mm-hmm. And she developed her own lifestyle protocol. And I think it's called the Core 30 protocol. But basically, I kind of do the same thing. If somebody is planning on going off their medication, first of all, talk to your doctor, because these things a lot of times shouldn't just be stopped cold turkey. Mm-hmm. But we also talk about, okay, so what has this medication depleted in your body? Let's work on that. Let's get you on some good foundations, you know, because we talked about how that ladder needs that foundation. Mm-hmm. So I always talk about foundations. So we make sure all the basics are in place, you know, sleep, nutrition, hydration, things like that. And once those things are in place, then I find it's pretty easy, especially with kiddos, because kids are so resilient. I mean, they're still growing and adapting at such a fast rate that, you know, once we start putting things into place, it really works. So sometimes we need to do some stool samples, or, you know, I do my observational triangulation too, which is a fancy way of saying that I look at people, I listen to people, mm-hmm. you know, I do muscle testing. I look at their eyes, I look at their tongue, their fingernails, things like that. And we start to try to decide what's the lowest hanging fruit that's going to get us as far as we can. And for my clients, every single one of them, it's different. So sometimes we start by focusing on gut health. Sometimes right away, I'm like, Hey, I have some of this stuff right here. Can we try this? You know, and we've tried it with kids in the office and seen that the, for some, the effects are immediate, some they aren't, but with that bioidentical progesterone, for those who can't see the video but are listening,
right,
holding a bottle of Ona's Lunapro 5.
Right.
So that's something that I'm doing now. there are some things that everybody should be doing. And then once we get past that, it's a very nuanced, personalized approach, mm-hmm. you know? So sometimes we do a botanical blend for working on candida. A lot of these kids have candida or gut health yeah. issues, things like that.
When I first found progesterone, it was through Ray White's progesteronetherapy.com website. I don't believe there was much mention of children in there. There might have been here and there, but I didn't really pay close attention to that at the time. But something that I tried on my own, because I knew that animals have progesterone and hormones just like we do, and was that I had read that it was really good for incontinence in women who are losing, who are starting to leak. And that can be at any age, but most common in menopause and perimenopause. And so I thought, well, why? And I researched that, and it was that the integrity of the ureter requires hormone balance. It requires estrogen and progesterone to be opposed for it to like work well. Like I think it's the urinary sphincter maybe. And I remember reading that and thinking, gosh, if it works on people, then why wouldn't it work on my dog, who has been leaking ever since I had her fixed when she was a puppy, and she was already like 10, 11, 12 years old. And sure enough, well, first of all, it exactly what happened to me when I used it happened to her, which everything got worse. She was no longer leaking. She was literally just peeing in puddles all over the house. And it was just a nightmare, but it was only for a day. And I thought, something's happening here. This is the estrogen fighting back. So I put it on her inside of her ears, on her little nose, and on her belly. And by the next day, she had completely stopped. I mean, I had her for like 10, 11 years or so, and she had completely stopped. And so then I started to realize that it helps with catamenial epilepsy and seizures. She also had seizures. And it would completely, it didn't altogether stop them, but it reduced them from monthly, every full moon, from monthly to, you know, once in a blue moon. And I just thought, this is tremendous. Like, if I had children, I would absolutely use it on children. So we started recommending it, and I started to research it. And that's how I found Dr. Platt, because he was saying 100% children with autism, children with ADHD, children with mild, mild behavioral disorders, bedwetting, you name it. He was like, use it. And it was all very, very low dose and low strength. So 5% cream or less. And it was pea sizes. And I want to know what you do or what you've dabbled with, because it is experimental, because most people will say, what the hell are you doing dosing a child with hormones? But the reality is, that's a stigma and it's ignorance, because we have hormones at that age. In fact, you can be estrogen dominant, and most young girls are when they start their periods, which is why they're so absolutely miserable a lot of the time, because their estrogen comes in like a lion. And they've got no lion tamer to help it. And so the progesterone's way low. Why is it way low? So many reasons. That's another day, another podcast. But so I'm completely fascinated. I have, since then, I have helped a lot of children, mothers and parents with their children using progesterone, and with epilepsy, with all sorts of different issues. And it's been beyond encouraging. It's like almost miraculous in many cases. So how would yeah. you even attempt to, like, how would you, as a doctor, how would you start to say, okay, let's try this much, or let's do this?
Well, I usually start with the educational component, and especially when we're talking about ADHD. I mean, if you've ever taken any kind of health related course in your life, you may have learned that too much insulin leads to low blood and brain glucose levels. So that's kind of where I start there. And that problem plays, I believe, in a part in the attention part of the hyperactivity attention. That's what plays a part in the being able to focus. you know, then I explain that, you know, when a person eats sugar or carbs to calm what I call the hangries, I always ask people, does your kid get the hangries and do you get them? Remember that that's our brains asking for fuel to help us concentrate. From there, the body overproduces adrenaline to compensate or balance all of those hormones. So with ADHD, we need to get the adrenaline switched over from a hormone in the body to a neurotransmitter in the brain. And I think that's really key. So when I'm talking about switching the hormone to the neurotransmitter, that's where the bioidentical progesterone comes into play. So if you're listening,
you it'll be in the show notes
here. You can just listen and relax and let it sink in. But I mean, this is just a general protocol. Of course, when I'm working with somebody, we talk and I try to tweak things for them, but it's not meant to diagnose or treat anything specific. First of all, I suggest taking cod liver oil because that supplies a lot of antioxidants and good fats. And it gives you the bioavailable forms of vitamin A and vitamin D, which I refer to as hormone D. And if you can swallow a capsule, I really like the Jigsaw cod liver oil myself. I think it's good quality. And I like the business practices of Jigsaw as well. So I take that and I feel comfortable recommending that to people. If you need a liquid, I use the Nordic Naturals option with my kids and they come in different flavors. I think there's like a strawberry and an orange and a lemon flavor. So I give those to my kids on a teaspoon every morning and they love it and they're picky eaters. So, you know, when I tell people my kids take cod liver oil, they're like, how do you get them to take it? I'm like, on a spoon. That's like, they just take it. They like it. There's a lot of really, really great research behind fish oil for ADHD. It's very easy to find out there. And I like the cod liver oil option, and that's a lot. That has a lot to do with what I've learned from Morley Robbins' root cause protocol. And I really like to sneak the RCP into a lot of recommendations that I make for people because I believe that the root cause of many of the complaints that I hear is inflammation. And I think inflammation plays into any kind of mental health issue as well. And I believe that Dr. Kelly Brogan also talks about that. So we got to get that inflammation down. Something else I really like to recommend is magnesium lysinate glycinate or just a magnesium glycinate. For the calming property and how it relaxes the body. I think just about every one of my clients takes MagSoothe.
Nice.
It's something that we've been using almost from the very beginning because we've seen so many great results from that. And I always show people I have an empty canister in my office and it looks like it's made for nighttime. So I always show them, you know, like it's got a moon and stars on it, but like you can really take that any time of day.
Yeah.
So I take it first thing in the morning because I feel like my anxiety is worse first thing in the morning. So that's when I take it. And I also take it before bed to help me sleep. If I'm really stressed out and I'm burning through my magnesium, I'll have a little more during the day. And my kids like the flavor of it. So it's really good. So that is, I always get people on that right away if I can. And then Dr. Platt talks about ketones being so important. And I think this is really one of the puzzle pieces for getting that hormone switched over to a neurotransmitter because it works with the bioidentical progesterone. It helps to convert the adrenaline and get us back to a point where we can focus. So
what is do you know the name of the neurotransmitter or is it, are there more than one?
Adrenaline.
To switch it from the hormone to switch it from the hormone to neurotransmitter.
I believe it would still be considered adrenaline, but it would be working as a neurotransmitter.
Oh.
It works in a different way when you get it to switch over. diet, you know, the ancestral diet is wonderful, and we want to stick to low glycemic foods. We want to really avoid sugar and processed foods as much as possible, which is bad news for parents who don't like to cook, but it's absolutely necessary, you know, to, I don't ever expect anybody to be perfect. I always say progress over perfection, but if you can cook more of your meals at home, you're going to have a better success rate, you know, with the progesterone.
Right.
So we always want to focus on the organic vegetables and proteins. I really encourage people to choose grass-fed meats and try to avoid the sugar spikes and sugar crashes. You know, and something that a lot of adults are doing right now is fasting. And I have a really an interesting story about a man who is, he's 44 years old and has never been diagnosed with ADHD, but I started to suspect that he was, he had some of these traits of adrenaline dominance and maybe even some estrogen dominance. And he was also fasting for probably 18 hours a day. And he was really, really struggling with his weight. He was struggling with mood swings, a lot of anger. And he has a past history of drug and alcohol abuse and addiction. And, you know, all of a sudden I'm like, why didn't I think of this for this person? So I ended up calling him and I said, hey, I've been thinking about you. And I wonder if you would try this protocol that I've been trying with my clients and consider taking bioidentical progesterone. And I think he thought I was a little bit crazy, but I grabbed a bunch of things from my house and ran them over. And I said, hey, here's how you do it. Let's just try it for a few days and see what happens. And this, you know, this is a man that we're giving bioidentical progesterone to, a grown man, and his behavior has totally changed. I mean, nice. He acts like a different person now. He's feeling better. Something that he was struggling with was sleep. And now he's sleeping like a rock at night.
And he's not fasting.
I told him, cut it out on the fasting. You know, a lot of my clients are very alternative minded and challenge me with their own knowledge. And a lot of times are very much into this healthy lifestyle, which includes fasting. And I have to really caution people about that because if they're also dealing with any kind of mood or mental health issues, that can really contribute to the insulin spikes and, you know, those blood sugars, roller coaster, like I call it.
Adrenaline dominance there for sure. So
12 hours fasting is plenty. You know, I think that's plenty to allow our gut time to repair itself and allow our blood glucose to normalize itself. But any more than that, I don't think is beneficial.
Right. You know, we had this whole thing with these children that we would work with, especially the ones that had seizures, and they would do the ketogenic diet, like really, really strongly, like the keep the children in ketosis. And, you know, I'm learning so much now, and it was to prevent their seizures and help them with some level of cognition, depending on, you know, their how severe their state was. But and the more I'm learning now, though, I'm starting to wonder if it's not good. And if actually, you know, there's another way to go about doing it, even with these children, having more to do with like progesterone and not fasting them. And also, you know, on the issue of cod liver, like I'm still grappling with the cod liver thing right now, even though I still take it. But there are other really powerful forms of vitamin A retinol that we can get from, you know, like, and a lot of people can't do these things, of course, but like raw dairy, like raw kefir or even doesn't have to be raw, but kefir dairy, goat's dairy, you know, goat milk, kefir goat milk. And liver, of course, people, the problem is that most people don't like these things. And isn't that interesting that they are so, even cod liver, they're just so high in these nutrients that are vital for our livers to be able to process the, you know, the food that we eat and turn it into usable fuel. But the whole governance of that is the thyroid and the liver working together. And all of this is supported by progesterone. And it's just, I wonder now, you know, if we would have been done a better service if we had started with the progesterone and stopped the fasting, but we would continue the fasting. And so I wonder if it would have had more of an impact is all I'm thinking. But yeah, I'm finding people are fasting and they're losing weight and they're feeling really sharp and high energy. And I'm just sitting there looking at their body type and their medical history. And I'm thinking, that's not energy, friend. That is adrenaline. And they're running on adrenaline. They're feeling good because they lost weight. And all of a sudden, 6 months down the line, sooner or later than that, they start to have this adrenal fatigue. They start to put on the pounds. They start to lose cognitive function. And I don't know anybody who has done well with consistent fasting. I've seen some people do, including myself, do well for short stints. But now I'm realizing that that was all just me running on adrenaline. Back to the Chihuahua mode. You've never seen a fat Chihuahua, have you?
That's true.
Yeah.
I mean, if we had only known what we know now, and you know, it's okay. We have to forgive ourselves and move on. And
yeah.
And the thing is, you know, bioidentical progesterone is so safe. I mean, I feel very comfortable allowing my children to use it, giving it to men, as you can see. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not just, you know, it started with the adrenaline dominance for me and learning about women. And I was really interested in women's health. And now I'm thinking, you know, I really am comfortable giving it to a lot of people. So I should say, you know, the Luna Pro 5, so that's the one that I've been recommending for kiddos. And I just tell them to do one pump at least twice a day. Don't ever go longer than 12 hours without some progesterone, or they can space it throughout the day, do a pea size, you know. Dr. Platt is really an advocate of using it right before you eat a meal, because evidently we burn through a lot of progesterone while we're eating. So if somebody is complaining of heart palpitations when they're eating or after eating, I make that connection that maybe they need a little bit of progesterone before the meal. Or I've even been able to extinguish some symptoms that I've had after a meal by using a little bit of the oral form of the Onas that you have. Yeah, but even this man that I mentioned, who's 44 years old, I mean, he's not small. Normally I would say, you know, use a 10%, but all I had at my house was a small dose, you know, so he's using 5% twice a day, and that's working for him, you know, so that's a pretty small dose.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of different research about, especially from Dr. Ray P. I think men need a lot less. Even male boys, you know, need a lot less than women do. For men, I think maybe a nice dose would be like pea sizes of the 5%, and then with the oral oil, really like 2 drops. I know Dr. Ray Pete's progesterone is Progest E, and I believe that's 3 milligrams per drop. And I think Georgie Dinkoff, who I had on my show recently, I think I was told he does like 3 milligrams a couple times a day, and like every day. And he just does it, and it, you know, he has it on him, so he knows how he feels when he needs more. And some, you know, if someone gets tired, if they're taking it and they maybe overdone it, and the good news is you can't overdose on progesterone. They have tried many times to find the toxic level of bioidentical progesterone and have never arrived there. And so you really can't, what you can do is put yourself to sleep. You can definitely fall asleep from it, get sleepy from it. So if you do that, ideally, you should come down from that, unless your goal is to get some sleep, in which case, have at it.
It has helped me a lot. I used to have catamenial seizures, and I had toxic black mold poisoning from a mold disaster we had in our house. And,
wow.
That is what really got me turned around, was the bioidentical progesterone.
So, amazing.
That's amazing. I love it. So
oh, wow.
You, and then, you know, if people want to know, especially women tend to need much higher doses. So the estrogen dominance support group is a great place to start, or talk to a practitioner, mm-hmm. you know, who's going to work with you if you're a woman, because I feel like that's more of a personalized approach that you need to take in that.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I mean, a lot of people there's a lot of fear surrounding hormones as well. So, yes. You know, I get that. And so, yeah, I do recommend finding a functional practitioner and somebody like yourself, somebody like me. And there's also a lot of people out there who are starting to really get hip to understanding progesterone and how to use it. Very cool. Well, I'm so excited. We are already up on over an hour. So that is like, that's awesome.
It's a lot.
I know. It's so good. All your information is in the show notes, and people can check out all the stuff, including the protocol that you recommended. And yeah, so thank you so much.
Thank you, Kitty.
So much to know, right? So I'm going to just say this caveat now, which is I would not run out and just start giving your child that is bedwetting or having night terrors progesterone. I would certainly recommend some guidance, like contact Dr. Rose Hollow. Absolutely. Her info is in the show notes. Personally, myself, if it was my child, I would not hesitate to use bioidentical progesterone on my child that was having bedwetting or night terrors, or, you know, fits of anger, tantrums, any of these, especially those hangry tantrums, all this stuff. I would not hesitate to use bioidentical progesterone. And of course, my favorite is Ona's Natural, and that's also in the show notes. I would use the lowest strength, which are the 3%, or the oil. So all these things are finding ways to overcome these imbalances that can take over our children's lives or our lives. And, you know, don't forget, you know, I haven't talked about spore-based probiotics in a while. You know, the progesterone alone is not going to remedy the gut. You know, the food alone is not going to remedy the gut. You have to come at it from all angles. And it takes a good 2 years to remediate the gut, they say, when you're diligent about it. And so it's very important to make sure you're aware of all the different tools. I personally completely avoid regular probiotics. I would not go near them any longer. I mean, I never did, but I would definitely look into the spore-based probiotics. My favorite is Just Thrive. And that coupon code and link is also in the show notes. It's a 20% off, which is a fantastic discount for these particular products. So check them out. And yeah, if you want to reach out to Dr. Rose, all that's in the show notes. Thank you for joining us. Yay!